Good morning, everyone, and welcome to another day here at the Damage Report. I'm John Iadarola. Very lucky to be coming to you on this day of pretty fascinating and, in some cases, potentially horrifying news with a special guest joining us once again, host of Woke AF Day, co-host of The New Abnormal, Daniel Moody. Welcome back to the Damage Report.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Very glad to have you here. We've got a couple of topics that I know I've seen you tweeting about recently, and so I knew that you would be interested in them. By the way, I apologize in advance if you get asked this a lot, but what is it like when you name your podcast with the word woke in it, and then the right decides to declare war on the very concept and make literally everything about that? Is that almost like sort of a special benefit?
Yeah, it's like free advertising, right? Because mm-hmm. You're basically going to war on consciousness, which is what I say on my show all the time. Like you're going to war against awareness and people understanding that there are systemic issues. So what you would mm-hmm. rather then is for people to be ostriches. So I love it. Go ahead, go to war on woke. It drives yeah. more people to my show.
100%. I love their attempt to reframe things. Elon Musk, genius. Tweeted yesterday or 2 days ago, because woke is a lie, we must fight against it. Like, dude, it's just about making sure that people know what actually happened and what's going on. That's literally all it is. I get that that scares you.
Right.
I get that, but anyway. Yeah. So anyway, and by the way, in a related sense, I remember when we launched the Damage Report a few years ago, it came from the concept of, you know, you wake up in the Trump years, it's like, oh dear God, what's going on now? And I would get comments from people who are like, well, what happens if everything's good? And I thought, we'll cross that bridge when it gets to it. I'm honestly not worried about the news being too positive. That'll be fine. But anyway, very glad to have you here. Thank you. Very glad to have all of you out there here as well. Thank you for joining us, because as I said, we do have a lot to talk about. We're gonna be breaking down all the big political news of the day with Danielle. And then I'm gonna be taking the aftermath solo. We got a lot to cover there too. We're gonna be diving deep into AI. You know how like AI is gonna develop fast, they keep telling us? Yeah, well, the news about AI develops even faster. So we got a lot to break down there, as well as news from around the world in meanwhile in. So in advance of all of that, please hit the like button and share the stream. You can reach out to us with breaking news, interesting comments, funny little jokes, and you might win yourself a $100 Blue Apron gift card. So get those comments in and we'll respond as we go. But with all that said, Danielle, you ready to start the show?
I am so excited, I'm ready.
Okay, well then in that case, let's do it. It's technically 2023, but doesn't it kind of feel like 2015? If you're feeling that, here's why that might be. CNN is gonna be hosting a live town hall with former President Donald Trump. Yep, we're doing it again, the whole thing. We're gonna do the town halls and I hope we get the podium cam soon. But anyway, they say in their announcement that CNN anchor Caitlin Collins is going to be conducting the town hall. It's gonna be taking place Wednesday, May 10th at 9 p.m. Eastern time. And I think sort of demonstrating that they understand that some people might have a problem with this, they attempted to get out in front of criticism by saying CNN has a quote, longstanding tradition of hosting leading presidential candidates for town halls and political events as a critical component of the network's robust campaign coverage. All of that I'll mostly accept. We can debate how robust the campaign coverage is in a substantive sense, and the icing out of progressive and leftist candidates and all that. But they do generally bring in presidential candidates. The issue is that there's never really been a presidential candidate like Donald Trump. And this event, by the way, that's not the end of it. They say it's gonna be the quote, first of many in the coming months as CNN correspondents travel across the country to hear directly from voters. Ooh, they're gonna be in diners soon, really exciting. Anyway, a lot of people had a problem with this. I saw Keith Olbermann said, I think we can say Chris Licht, who replaced Jeff Zucker as CNN chief executive, his conversion of CNN into a political and journalistic whorehouse is complete. I'm gonna take issue with the terminology there, but I get the idea that he thinks that this is gonna reflect poorly on CNN. In any event, Danielle, I saw you tweeting about this yesterday. What do you think about them doing this town hall?
Well, what I said in my tweet, not as articulate as Keith Olbermann, I said I said that CNN is absolute trash. And the reality is, I wish that people would have seen the fine print, which is that they're going to continue to do this as a way to court white Trump voters to their airwaves, right? They're trying to carve in and take over the numbers that Tucker Carlson had. It's with their revolving door of people who we knew were part of the Trump administration, known to lie and carry the water of that administration, that they now have on air as personalities and contributors. So this is just a continuation. I think that it is beyond the pale and ridiculous and dangerous, because maybe Chrysalis doesn't remember, because you know he's just been CEO for the past year. But I believe that CNN had how many bomb threats happen because of Trump supporters, because of Donald Trump, particularly specifically calling out CNN as the enemy of the people, and they received bomb threats because of it, right? Their on-air hosts have been threatened because of Donald Trump. Because of Donald Trump and the types of violent people that follow Donald Trump. So I think that it is incredible that once again, money and power will outweigh the good and safety of our democracy and the people in this country and journalistic integrity and the First Amendment. But you know, go off, you know, do your thing, CNN. And I hope that their ratings crash and burn the way that 60 Minutes did when they decided to have Marjorie Taylor Greene on and do a whole hour on Marjorie Taylor Greene and all of her QAnon loving thoughts.
Yeah, they gave 60 Minutes to someone who doesn't have 60 IQ points. It was an amazing decision on their part. By the way, I have to admit, I'm an idiot, you know? Like, you know, I reacted to this like a lot of people did, and I thought, well, obviously they're doing this for the ratings, but I hadn't made the connection to the Tucker Carlson thing. The timing is so close. That's definitely what it is.
Yep.
They know that Fox viewers are like adrift. Oh, I mean, I guess Fox News is basically the Bud Light of TV these days, so I gotta go somewhere. You're right, they're attempting to tap into that.
Yeah, I mean, let's understand that Tucker Carlson, on average, I think he was pulling in what, 3.3 to 3.5 million viewers, right? Far beyond any other cable news show, whether you're looking at CNN or MSNBC or any of the other networks. And so they're trying to tap into that. Their tour that they're gonna supposedly do to go and talk to voters, let us also look at the asterisk. It's not voters that they're going to talk to. They're going to talk specifically to white voters, to white people who feel a grievance in this country, to understand, you know, the mind of the MAGA people. So they're not going to have a town hall in a variety of places that showcase the demographic shift in this country, that showcase people that are actually concerned with the direction that the Republican Party is trying to drag this country. No, no, no. They're gonna go to these small white rural towns and talk to Trump supporters about why it doesn't matter if the man is twice impeached, has 34 felony counts against him, is currently on trial in New York City for rape, and any other indictments that may come across summer. You know.
Yeah, I'll run through them for us in a sec, but yeah, I think the issue though in defense of the media is that you can really only talk to voters in diners, and I guess no one who isn't white ever eats at a diner, so their hands are really tied, Danielle. I don't know what you want them to do. There are no gathering places other than diners.
So, evidently, I don't, you know, let me tell you, I'm from the suburbs of Long Island, New York. I grew up going to diners, never had a camera in my face, never had anybody ask me my thoughts.
Yeah, you know, I spend a lot of money, probably too much, at IHOP and Denny's every day just hoping to be interviewed, but thus far it hasn't happened. Some of you watching might wonder, especially if you've only been following American politics for a little bit, why are people freaking out so much about Donald Trump being given this town hall by CNN? I mean, after all, he is not only running for president, but he is likely to be the nominee. Well, here are a few reasons that some people have brought up. He continues to peddle the lie that Joe Biden's victory in 2020 was the result of electoral fraud. Then on January 6, 2021, he used that lie to incite an insurrection on Congress, now linked to 9 deaths carried out by supporters seeking to block Biden's win. Oh, and also possibly kill Mike Pence. More than 1,000 arrests have been made, hundreds of convictions secured, some for seditious conspiracy. Trump was impeached a second time for that, but acquitted when Republican senators stayed loyal to him because they cared more about their electoral future than about the possibility of the American government being overthrown. He now faces a federal investigation for his election subversion and incitement of the Capitol attack, as well as a state election subversion investigation in Fulton County, Georgia, in which indictments are expected this summer. Those indictments would follow the indictments that he's already experienced for his hush money payments to the adult film star Stormy Daniels. There's also a civil rape case ongoing literally as we record this from writer E. Jean Carroll, which we'll be talking about a little bit later on in the show. He's also got all the different investigations of the Trump organization, all the tax stuff. Oh, also he stole a bunch of classified documents. And he willfully spreads dangerous disinformation like it's a bodily function. And the issue with that is that it's not that there's no town hall they could do that I think would be as damaging as the one that they're gonna end up doing. I think that you could set one up if you wanted to that was journalistically responsible. And the reason, like, you could always do that with any politician, but the reason that I think it's almost easier to do now is because Donald Trump doesn't just lie a lot. He tells the same lies in almost the same order over and over and over again. So you could literally just have a binder where each page is a rebuttal with facts to any of the insane claims that he make, and just put like Anderson Cooper or whatever and just have him like flip through as they go. You could set it up structurally so that when he tells an insane lie about the election being stolen or about trans people or whatever, you don't just let him filibuster. You cut it right there. You go to the actual facts. They do that on sports shows when they fact check people, and then you come back to him. There are these things they could do, but I think the issue with Danielle is that it's like impossible to imagine doing literally any of that.
I mean, because what you just brought up, John, like, they would have to actually care about our democracy. They would actually have to want to do things that are going to strengthen our democracy, which is about debate, right? You could bring together an entire town hall. Polls have shown that the people who are going to vote, people who voted in the midterm elections, they care about democracy. They care about the issues that are actually affecting the American people. But at the foundation of that is their ability to vote. Is their ability to have a voice in this democracy. And so if you were going to have a town hall, talk about the issues that people care about. Talk about abortion, talk about book banning, talk about, right, like the target that is being put on the backs of trans people, you know, yeah. And have this conversation in the context of who do you want for president? I don't understand why they're doing a town hall with Donald Trump. Do you understand how far in advance we are from this?
That's true.
From this upcoming election? So again, this is nothing more than an audience power grab that they're trying to do in rivaling Fox News. This is not about what you thought journalism was for, which was to educate the people and to actually be that fourth state, to have checks and balances with our politicians and with the public.
Yeah, I mean, like, immediate follow-up, are you doing one with Marianne Williamson? Like, and great, she's not the front runner, I understand that. Are you doing one with RFK Jr.? Like, they're selectively doing one right now with him. They're not even doing it with Ron DeSantis, which I would also hate. They're doing it with Trump. As you pointed out, the timing is suspect at best with Tucker Carlson, and we know how much CNN wants them ratings. In any event, we've given our thoughts, but I am curious what you all think about this. And so, we don't often do this on TDR, but we put up a poll at tyt.com/polls. Should CNN be holding this town hall? What do you think? I've tried to play a little bit devil's advocate of what they could do with it. I think that that's not what they're gonna do. I think it is gonna be a disaster and is gonna actively spread disinformation. And maybe CNN sees it as, oh, he'll tell, you know, 90 minutes of lies, and then we'll have, I was gonna say Don Lemon, I guess not Don Lemon anymore, but we'll have someone afterward respond to it when the Trump fans are no longer watching. We'll see, we'll see. So you can go to tyt.com/polls and have your voices be heard. With that said, why don't we turn to a story we just alluded to, actually. Writer E. Jean Carroll has now wrapped her testimony in the civil rape case against Donald Trump. And as you probably were expecting, it got incredibly dirty. Not only the horrendous subject matter, but the way that E. Jean Carroll was treated by the Trump legal team, and especially Joe Tacopina, who cross-examined her and rolled out a lot of the normal sort of attacks against people making claims of sexual assault against powerful individuals that you've probably heard in past cases. They basically try to picture as someone who's just attention seeking, looking to make a name for yourself. The same as every woman who accuses a man of sexual misconduct. You just want attention. And as we all know, there's no better attention than assuring that you're gonna receive death threats from MAGA people for the rest of your life. In any event, on Thursday, Joe Tacopina spent considerable time probing an email between Carroll and a friend where they discussed the need to stop Trump and said they had a scheme in mind. He also repeatedly questioned why Carroll didn't scream when the alleged rape took place or why there was no one around to witness the incident. So those are interesting points. Why don't we address those? So could you have a scheme and also have been raped? I don't think that that's impossible. He doesn't engage with it intellectually. Why didn't she scream? Why was no one around? Let me flip the causality on that for you, Joe Tacopino. Maybe that's why he chose that time to rape her. Have you considered that there weren't a lot of people around? Why she didn't scream? The game that they play with all of the different hurdles you need to pass to be the perfect, proper victim of sexual assault is a pointless game to play because those hurdles can keep being extended as far as they need to be. If she had screamed, do you think that Joe Tacopina would be defending her right now instead of Trump? Does anyone think that there's anything that she could have done? Any amount of alarms she could have raised, reports she could have filed in the immediate aftermath that would have caused defenders of Donald Trump to say, oh, I guess there's really something here. I'm re-questioning my loyalty to this guy. I kind of doubt it. But Danielle, what do you think?
I mean, Joe Tacopino is like, he's like a cartoon character almost, right? Like in terms of the types of people, the types of lawyers that Trump likes to surround himself with. But there is no perfect victim, right? And statistics have shown that a majority of rape victims do not scream, right? Your body, your mind goes into shock of this assault, this traumatic assault that is happening. So one, that is BS. And then this idea that why were there no witnesses? I'm sorry, do most rapes happen in broad daylight in the middle of a park? They do not, right? And so again, all the ways in which you have debunked the line of questioning is right. And I think, again, folks, none of this is normal. The idea that we have a man that is currently running for a second term at being president of the United States that is on trial for rape is unheard of. And yet we are acting as if, oh, this is just par for the course. This is not par for the course. And she is one of over 20 women that have accused Donald Trump of sexual assault and sexual harassment over his decades of being in the public eye. And so I think that what is going to be damning, which I believe is either happening today or later this week, which is the testimony of the two other women who are going to be coming forward. And I gotta tell you, I can think of a lot of friggin' ways to make money. Putting my life on the line and saying that I was raped by a former president of the United States who I know whose loyal fan base is violent, is not one of them, right? I can think of a lot of other ways to go about making money. This ain't one of them. And so that on its face is just BS. But I think that the testimony from the two other women that is going to be permitted by the judge is going to show this pattern of abuse that Donald Trump has exercised because their stories sound really similar, right? And in his own words, when you're a star, they let you do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, look, obviously what Donald Trump has said is not itself proof of any individual sexual assault, but as a general rule, if you wanted to inoculate yourself against these sorts of accusations, maybe you wouldn't brag about doing the exact thing that you're being accused of doing. That would be my advice. By the way, isn't it funny that they would have you believe? I don't believe anything that Taco Pina is saying or any of the defenders of Donald Trump about what they think about her reaction, that they're genuinely not convinced by it. They believe that if someone rings your doorbell or pulls their car into your driveway, that a reasonable response is, oh my God, just start shooting. People react in different ways, okay? It's funny what they think is acceptable and what's not. If she had murdered him, would that be acceptable? If she had pulled a revolver out of her purse and plugged him in the chest a couple of times, would you be convinced then, MAGA world? In any event, she says there was too much adrenaline, his chest was in the way, she feared making a scene. I mean, think about this. I've always thought that it's incredibly bizarre that anyone had, you know, a single minute to give to Donald Trump ever. But at that point, back in the 90s, he was a relatively like beloved figure in New York. You want to be the person, a writer who's accusing him of sexual assault? It might have been marginally less dangerous then than when he's, you know, the head of this cult or whatever. But it still is incredibly difficult. And they dug so much into her past trying to find inconsistencies. She apparently was groped by Les Moonves. And they're like, well, why didn't you say anything about that? Well, I don't know, man. Maybe the fact that she's routinely been victimized throughout her life hasn't given her a lot of faith in power structures to protect her. Then they point out, after she says, I was born in 1943, I'm a member of the silent generation. Women like me were taught to keep our chins up and not complain. The fact that I never went to the police is not surprising for someone my age. I would have rather done anything than call the police. They then say, yeah, well, when someone damaged a mailbox at your house, you called the cops then. So you'll do it for a mailbox, but not a sexual assault. It is possible. I've seen photos of Joe Taco Pino. So I will accept that he might be as stupid as you would believe from that statement. Maybe the fact that it's less serious frees her up to feel like maybe the cops will do something. Whereas when it's accusing billionaires of rape, that might be scarier as a prospect. Like, again, what we're gonna like, we're gonna like drag Joe Taco Pina into the modern world. He's not listening, he doesn't care. He's paid to act like the idiot that he is. But anyway, as you point out, there are multiple contemporaneous witnesses that she told at that time. If they wanna make the case that she's been lying about it for 30 years, then go right ahead. But I think that their defense is shaping up to be satisfying to the MAGA base in that it is inherently misogynistic, but beyond that, not particularly convincing. Any final thoughts?
I mean, I just think, you know, for Joe Taco Pina to even bring up Lee Moonves, wasn't he fired for sexual assault? Didn't the network have to pay out money? So yeah, he was a sexual assaulter. I don't like, was he trying to help her defense? I have no idea because I thought that that was absolutely ridiculous. But you know, again, the testimony of these other two women, including her, will show the pattern. And again, to your point, if you don't want to be accused of these things, maybe don't be caught saying things on tape that would lead people to believe this is a deep possibility that you're a sexual assaulter.
100%. Okay, everybody, we're gonna take our first break. We come back though, we're in the opening moments of a major strike that could affect your life. We're gonna be breaking down why the strike was initiated, what effect it might have in the short and long term. So don't go anywhere, we'll be right back. It is now official, we have launched into a major strike. 11,000 members of the Writers Guild of America have gone on their first strike in 1.5 decades over a dispute about the compensation, both amount and type of compensation to writers, and how they've been treated during this major transition in TVs, movies, video games, all of that. So the boards of directors of both the East and West Coast divisions of the WGA voted unanimously to call a strike effective 12:01 a.m. Tuesday, meaning we're now into it. And we're gonna give you more information about what they're hoping to achieve and all of that. We're gonna perhaps debate how long we think this will go. But to be clear, it is almost certainly going to be massive in terms of its impact. The last time there was a writer strike, this is back in 2007 to 2008, work stopped for 100 days. And in that just 100 days, it cost $2.1 billion to California's economy alone. Now, according to the WGA's proposals chart, The Guild's proposals would gain the writers about $429 million in total per year. So actually a small portion of what it's gonna cost the economy if just nothing is being done. The counter proposal from the opposition of the unions, they want to increase it by about $86 billion per year. And so you can see that there is still a very wide chasm between the two positions. That's way more complicated than just raw numbers, but that shows you that there is a lot of distance to be traveled. And so it could be that that 100 days in the last strike is almost nothing compared to what we could be facing right now. By the way, in the time between that last strike and this one, according to the WGA, so bear that in mind, industry profits have improved from $5 billion in 2000 to $28 to $30 billion from 2017 to 2021. And I think they're arguing, I think quite accurately, that if the profits are up so much, especially, and I think most people agree to this, because of the quality of writing in these programs, everybody knows that TV is better than it was a couple of decades ago, then it kind of seems like some of that financial benefit should go to the writers. We're gonna give you more details, but Danielle, I'm curious, what do you think?
I mean, I just don't understand why we can't pay people what they're worth, right? Like, because all this ends up coming back to greed of CEOs and shareholders of these networks that want to be able to take in all of the profits and not pay out the people that are actually making it so that their platforms and their networks are successful in the first place. And so, you know, I think that people also have a false idea of actually how much most writers make. You only know like the famous ones, right? But they don't make a ton of money. So they're just asking for their fair share of what has become popularized over time because of streaming to be able to put that into their own pockets. So I think that the cost to California, what you said was billions of dollars. I mean, yep. that's extraordinary. But I hope that a lot of the actors who have a lot of power, directors and what have you, come out in support vocally of the strike, because I think that people should be paid what they're worth. They strike not out of spite, but because they're not being compensated.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. In terms of the impact, I mean, so it was 2 billion back 15 years ago. Obviously, it would be much more for the same period of time. Like, honestly, I'm not an expert, obviously, but if it goes a year, couldn't that cost $2 billion just to like Marvel alone? Like, I feel like if they have to lose a couple of shows, a couple of movies, that is major money, let alone all the content being produced for so many different streaming services. In any event, the median weekly pay for writer producers, by the way, has declined by 23% over the last decade. When accounting for inflation, screenwriter pay has also declined by 14%. This is as, you know, we're in this golden era of amazing content. They're making less money. I'm not gonna name names or whatever, but my wife, who's a screenwriter, she took a class with another one who has written awesome episodes of shows like The Haunting of Hill House and Midnight Mass. These like popular shows or whatever. And he showed his class literally his residuals off of those. Like, he wasn't hiding anything. And you can't live off of it. Even wow. Successfully solo writing popular episodes of popular shows on big platforms like Netflix, it isn't enough to actually live. It used to be like the long shot that like, oh, I hope they pick up my script. But now, even if they do, you probably still have to bartend or whatever. That's just not tenable. Certainly not if you want to attract creative people giving you awesome work. By the way, I wanna read just one account of the experience from Adam Conover, says, this is why we're striking. Studios are trying to turn writing into a gig job, eliminating the writer's room, forcing screenwriters to work for free, paying late night writers a day rate. If we don't fight back, writing will cease to exist as a livable career. I mean, they're effectively arguing that for a lot of people, it already is. If you are writing for one of, there's only a couple of those late night shows. If you're writing for one, that's your career. And I don't think that that's unreasonable to ask. You're not, it's not a gig, you know? You're not on an app. You're writing for Jimmy Kimmel. You deserve to make some money. I'm not even a big fan of Jimmy Kimmel or whatever, but I imagine the writers are talented and deserve the money. In any event, I do wanna transition to the effect. A lot of you hearing that the writer's strike is now on are probably wondering, how is this going to affect things? You know, you might consume a lot of shows or movies, streaming content. You might wonder what is gonna happen. Well, first of all, I would say before worrying over much about whether like, you know, the next Guardians comes out or whatever, and I know they're finishing with this one. Bear in mind that you should show solidarity to fellow workers. It might make your life a little bit inconvenient, but you can also take it as an opportunity to go catch up on stuff that came out years before. There's some great shows that you might have never watched. Have you seen Battlestar Galactica? It's quite enjoyable. That can hold you over for a little bit. But that said, okay, what we got the solidarity. In terms of the actual effect, well, it does mean that a lot of different film and production houses are going to be shutting down. There will be some immediate effects as well. Nightly talk shows like The Late Show with Stephen Colbert, Jimmy Kimmel Live, The Tonight Show are set to go dark starting today. So this is immediate effects. Late Night with Seth Meyers and The Daily Show also will be hit. While such weekly shows as Saturday Night Live, Real Time with Bill Maher, and Last Week Tonight will be similarly impacted, though final decisions are expected to be made. I believe they announced that SNL is shutting down for the season. They had three more episodes. Pete Davidson was supposed to come back this weekend. I think that that's done. You also have popular broadcast network shows that have been renewed for following seasons starting this fall, including Abbott Elementary, NCIS, and La Brea. They would almost certainly be impacted in the near term. And so you might have to wait 6 months or a year for that next season. Movies less so immediately, because generally they've already shot the movies, they're being edited. So you might not feel the effects of this when it comes to movies for something like a year. But if there is a long strike, then that ripple is eventually going to be felt. Things will have to be pushed back. You know, if you are a fan of Marvel, well, that's going to disrupt all of that and everything. So it is certainly going to affect a lot of different stuff, Danielle. What do you make of that?
I think that people will probably be really happy that we're not in quarantine at this time, because that would really suck. Mm-hmm. No, but I think in all seriousness, the reality is that these are real people's lives and jobs, right? Like, we are seeing strikes happen all over the place. We saw a teacher strike. You've seen, you know, a nurse's strike. And we are at a time where there are record profits that are being made, and there is no trickle down that is happening. Right? You have, there are these networks and platforms are making billions upon billions of dollars. They're raising their, you know, their subscription fees on Netflix and other sites, right? That are hurting your bottom line. But that money is not going to the people that are making these platforms profitable in the first place. It doesn't make any sense. And the sad thing that we are going to see too is that these are industries on top of industries. These are not siloed effects, right? So there are entire systems of other jobs that will be impacted, and the trickle down of that, right, people will start to feel. So I hope that this doesn't go on for 100 days or longer. I hope that the greed can subside and people recognize that all anyone is asking for are living wages. All anyone is asking for is that if I'm contributing to you, CEO shareholder, being able to buy your fifth house or your third yacht or whatever it is that you're doing, right? I too would like to just be able to own a home. I too would like to be able to pay off my student loans, right? Yeah. Just to be able to exist. That's what people are asking for. And the greed in this country, the greed at the top is just out of control.
Yeah, 100%. No, I'm glad that you mentioned that it is obviously going to have knock-on effects, that if you are not producing a movie, then that doesn't just impact the profits in the end, but there's thousands and thousands of people who will be working on that. So we'll see. These strikes are always a gamble on who is going to be blamed, who is going to feel the pressure. And so that's why solidarity is so important in these cases. But you know, there's been a reckoning coming in Hollywood on a lot of different fields. I mean, the writers definitely being abused. The CGI houses and visual effects artists deserve to be roped in this as well, because they've become so indispensable. Stunt artists also not being recognized for the work that they do. In particular, look, I'm probably biased because I'm, you know, an amateur writer myself, but it has always struck me as weird how little people care about who write the entertainment that they consume. Like, I love TV and I love movies, and so much work from so many people goes into, say, a movie or whatever. Like, I like Endgame or whatever. It's good performances, great visual effects and everything. But like, it wouldn't exist if it wasn't written. Like, foundationally, it is so weird that we know the director, we know the stars, we don't know the person who came up with the idea and put word to paper. That just seems so weird to me. And so I hope that in addition to the pay and benefits, you know, possible profit sharing for streaming, all the financial benefits that they're looking to get out of this, maybe a little bit of recognition of the amazing, tireless work that's done by thousands and thousands of incredibly creative people. In any event, let's move on to an unrelated, well, not an unrelated story. It does involve California. So let's move on to this right now. Dianne Feinstein continues to be pressured to do something about her situation where she's AWOL, not able to vote, not able to help confirm judges. Recently participating in, I believe, her first Blue Sky AMA, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez skeeted, "Should retire?" questioned about Dianne Feinstein, saying, "I think criticisms of that stance as anti-feminist are a farce. Her refusal to either retire or show up is causing great harm to the judiciary, precisely where repro rights are getting stripped. That failure means now in this precious window, Dems can only pass GOP-approved nominees. And that window could extend for months or a year. It could potentially last until the Republicans in the midterms, the presidential election, are widely expected to take control of the Senate and maybe the presidency as well. But one of those two would be enough to, there goes your judicial window of opportunity. We have a very narrow window and these judges sit for many, many years. It's super consequential. And so I appreciate people like Representative Ocasio-Cortez pointing that out. She got an assist, probably not one that she would consent to, from Nikki Haley saying that Feinstein should resign and that's not sexist. Bear in mind that the only reason Nikki Haley is bringing this up is a way to attack Joe Biden and kind of Donald Trump, but without the bravery to actually point out by name that he's also as old that she says you should have to resign. In any event, Feinstein has missed dozens of votes. Because the judiciary panel of the judiciary committee is split 10-10, it means that only judges that the Republicans are okay with will actually get passed. And even their attempts to replace her with someone else were blocked by the fact that the committee is 10-10. And so we're at a real impasse here, Danielle. What do you make of it? What do you think should happen?
I have thought for the longest time, I don't understand why Dianne Feinstein is hanging on. She is 89 years old, she is clearly not in good health. Like, it is time to move aside. If you actually care about democracy, you care about Democrats and the future of this country, then you understand that it lays with the judiciary. We have seen the ability of Trump and Mitch McConnell to be able to take over the federal judgeships and how that has affected everyone at the state level, how it has affected us with the reversal of Dobbs and how it is affecting the student loan crisis and gonna be affirmative action and so on and so forth. I don't know what Feinstein is doing, right? And it isn't sexist, it's actually BS for us to say that it is. She's damn near 100 years old. She is not in good health. If she was in good health and able to hold on to her job, if she was out, you know, because she sprained her ankle, then I would say, oh yeah, 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 let's just hang on. She's missing dozens of votes and we don't have the time. We don't have the time. So I hope, frankly, that Biden and the administration are working behind the scenes to usher her out the door and not just sit there and say, oh, it's gonna be up to her. We are in consequential times and we don't have the time to wait for her to make up her mind and do what's right.
Yeah, you're right. It's not an ankle. Like, you know, shingles seems really serious. And I don't begrudge taking a little bit of time off, but who has the expectation that she's gonna come back from this stronger than ever? Like, who thinks that? Like, she going into the major issue was not there. You said, you know, you don't know why she's doing this, but I think we kind of do know why she's doing this, because every politician individually is the most important person in the world. They're all very, very special and very, very important. Yeah. And how dare any of us peasants imply otherwise, which is why I have a compromise, because I know that it's so important for these people to feel recognized. She should resign, but in return, every year at the State of the Union, she gets to stand up and wave, we all bow, everybody claps, you're very, very special, and we're very, very impressed with you. And then we go back to getting judges confirmed. How about that? That would be my idea. The issue is that I am not in charge, and it is actually quite difficult to do anything about this. So just briefly, you might be wondering, have they like experienced people being in office but not being able to serve for a long time? Well, yes, they actually have. So Senator Carl Mundt of South Dakota suffered a stroke back in 1969. When Dianne Feinstein was 72 years old and was absent from the Senate for 3 years without resigning, which, by the way, I would be really angry if I was his constituent and he spent 3 years not there. Stroke is serious and everything, but maybe take the time off. President Biden was gone for 7 months in the 1980s after he underwent 2 surgeries for brain aneurysms. Still at that point, he was very young. 7 months is a really long time, but in theory, he did serve for many, many years after that. Potentially, we would have been saved a lot of trouble if he had resigned and left politics at that point. But in any event, so it has happened. That said, what could be done? Well, unless a senator chooses to resign, the only way to remove them from office is by a 2/3 expulsion vote. And you might think, well, the Republicans would take any opportunity to get rid of a Democrat. Yeah, but they wouldn't, because they love that she's not there to vote and she would just be replaced by another Democrat. So they're not gonna participate in that. In its 234-year history, the Senate has expelled only 15 members, 1 for treason and 14 because of their support for the Confederacy during the Civil War. That was back when there was some shame for supporting the Confederacy. We've moved way beyond that. In any event, since the last expulsion, which was back in 1862, they've tried 13 times to remove senators for reasons from corruption to electoral fraud to being a Mormon. What a country we live in. In any event, all of those either resulted in the person resigning willingly or they survived the expulsion. And also, there's no out for the fact that California voters might be frustrated with her. They have no recourse to recall her. And so we're just sort of sitting and waiting to find out what happens. Any final thoughts, Danielle?
I mean, I just, you know, what I would love are for her constituents to come out and say, like, they want representation. And that right now, with her gone, they have no representation. And to see what kind of pressure that would put on her office to make this decision. Because it isn't enough for us just or high up, you know, whether it's the media talking heads or, you know, other members to say their feelings on this issue. I think that hearing from her constituents, if I were the Democrats right now, I would be going into California and I would be running, you know, running commercials, running kind of campaign style ads and saying, you know, Feinstein is missing. And because of that, our democracy is gonna go missing and we can't afford it.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't, maybe put pressure on her to save her legacy or something. They really care about legacy more than they care about the actual legacy they leave behind when they die. Maybe that would work. I don't know, but I don't know. I want to see some pressure from Biden. AOC doing these AMAs, you know, on Blue Sky and stuff is good, but it's going to take way more than that. Okay, with that said, we're going to take the last break of our first hour. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Save the cheerleader, save the world. It was such a simple
plot.
So
good.
And they had to ruin it. Hero, he was my hero. He was so, so good. Anyway, yes, they had Superman and Batman, but those were also way before. That was like an earlier generation, at least the good Batman movies. And then they eventually had the Dark Knight and all that. Anyway, with that said, we do have more news and unfortunately not that much time to get into it. So let's jump into this. I got some bad news for any of you who might be in Utah. If you try to load up a website, which I'm reading is called Pornhub, you're not gonna see what you're looking for, whatever it is that they have there. Instead, you'll see this.
Hi, I'm Sherita Bill. As you may know, your elected officials have required us to verify your age before granting you access to our website. While safety and compliance are at the forefront of our mission, giving your ID card every time you want to visit an adult platform is not the most effective solution for protecting our users. And in fact, will put children and your privacy at risk. In addition, mandating age verification without proper enforcement gives platforms the opportunity to choose whether or not to comply. As we've seen in other states, this just drives traffic to sites with far fewer safety measures in place. Very few sites are able to compare to the robust trust and safety measures we currently have in place. In order to protect children and user privacy, any legislation must be enforced against all platforms offering adult content.
So that is both awesome and definitely not what people in Utah were expecting when they tried to log on to whatever Pornhub is. So basically what Sherita Ville, who by the way has appeared on our show She's an activist in a number of different topics, including attempting to use pornography to get guys to be a little bit more cautious before jumping into cryptocurrency. That's what we actually talked about. But anyway, there she is attempting to get people to put a little bit of pressure on their government in Utah to dial back some of the legislation they've passed recently, including SB 287, online pornography viewing age requirements, which was passed in March and goes into effect today. In that law, a commercial entity that knowingly and intentionally publishes or distributes material harmful to minors on the internet from a website that contains a substantial portion of such material shall be held liable if the entity fails to perform reasonable age verification methods to verify the age of an individual attempting to access the material. So they have it in Utah. It's working its way through other state legislatures. And as Sheree pointed out in that video, even if we assume that everybody who voted for this in Utah was operating in good faith, and you know, feel free to make the decision to accept that, that doesn't mean that that's the effect that it actually has. It is easy to get around those services, and there are side effects of setting up those sorts of age requirements, which might result in people being victimized, both children, but then also adults as well, who might go to other sites, and then they might be victimized, identity stolen, all the different stuff that she went into that video. So I think it's a really interesting tactic. I like that Pornhub is once again using their clout, I guess, in the marketplace of ideas and smut to affect political change. Danielle, what do you make of all this?
I mean, one, I think that, you know, bravo to Pornhub. I think that what they're doing makes sense. And you know, the reality is that these attempts at supposedly keeping children safe is BS. And I'll just keep saying that. I'm like, do you know what you should be making legislation around? I don't know, gun safety. You know, you wanna, again, these places, they want to ban books and ban drag queens and ban porn and do all of these things to quote unquote keep children safe. But the one thing that we actually need in order to keep children safe would be gun reform. So, you know, attacking private industry as a way to, again, force a political agenda that is around faux ideas around religion and modesty, that's what they're doing. So I think that it's important to call it out. I think that it's important for these private companies like Pornhub and others to flex in a lot of different ways. But you know, again, if you want to keep kids safe, maybe stop them from getting murdered in their classrooms. Just an idea.
Yeah, exactly. No, I love what gets to qualify as a threat and what doesn't in America. So yeah, the fact that a trans person exists, mortal threat, needs to be wiped out, legislation everywhere, instantly dozens of bills. The massacres just doesn't even, like they're literally going on camera and saying, we're not gonna fix that. But they think they can do this. And look, it goes way beyond this. So this is, I think, extreme, but in the context of everything the right has been saying recently about pornography, it's actually relatively moderate. Marjorie Greene was just found on video, I think it was yesterday, saying we should porn. That's what she means. What she said was we should ban all porn. Like effectively, adults should not be allowed to consume this material. And again, I've been beating this drum day after day. The party that used to talk about freedom doesn't believe you should be able to smoke what you want, doesn't believe that you should be able to read what you want, doesn't believe you should be able to fap to whatever you want. Like, you do not have freedom in the world that they are trying to push us towards. And I am very happy to talk about this constantly because I believe that there are not a lot of Americans that actually agree with them. But the issue is that I don't think that the response to these sorts of culture war attacks and rolling back of rights and freedoms is anywhere near as big or as passionate as of right now as the attacks come against it. I think a lot of people, even in the wake of the destruction of Roe v. Wade, still don't understand how radical the other side is, how relentless they are at the state level in passing this sort of BS. And so I think that everybody needs to rise up. I should probably have worded that differently considering the subject matter, but any final thoughts, Danielle?
Oh God, that was good. My final thoughts are people need to pay attention to what the Republican agenda is because they actually do have an agenda. And it is to make sure that everyone thinks like they do, prays like they do, and isn't connected to anything that they find harmful. And it is, you know, to promote their white evangelical Christian agenda. So folks, wake up, vote at all levels of government.
Definitely. Well, unfortunately, that's about all the time that we have for this first hour. And it also is regrettably all the time we have with Danielle for today's show. So Danielle, while I would love to have you back on the show as soon as possible, between now and then, where can people follow your work?
Yes, thank you so much for having me. It's always a blast. You can follow me on Twitter at D2Cents, DeeTwoCents, and check out all of my podcasts wherever you get your podcasts, which is Woke AF Daily, Democracy-ish, and The New Abnormal with The Daily Beast.
Nice, awesome. Glad to have you here. Have a good one.
Thanks.
And all of you at home, that is the end of the first hour, but there's much more to come in the aftermath, including news from around the world. And meanwhile, Lynn, so don't go anywhere. I'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.